The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. When you listen to this show, I will be almost ready to depart New York and drive across the country to Los Angeles. So that's really exciting. And I hope you're going to join me in LA. And I don't mean like actually move in with me. What I mean is I want you to be at Catalyst Con West, which is September 11th to the 13th at the Los Angeles Marriott Burbank Airport Hotel. They've announced the opening keynote plenary speakers, which I am moderating, and that will be with Alex S. Morgan, Dr. Chris Donahue, Jenny Block, Mireille Miller-Young, and little old me. Also, the closing keynote afternoon tea, which is always really fun. The founder of Good Vibrations, Joni Blank, is going to be interviewed by Lynn Camella. And of course, before all the festivities get kicked off on Thursday night and Friday during the day, I am hosting two pre-con workshops, my sex educator boot camps number one and number two. These are professional training sessions for people who are sex educators or who want to be sex educators. So if you're one of the many people who's asked me how I got my job or what it's like to work at my job or how they can grow up to have a job like mine or that they want to take me out and just pick my brain for a couple hours over coffee, this is definitely the class or classes for you. You can read all about boot camps and the rest of the event at catalystcon.com. Use coupon code Tristan for $10 off your registration. And that's $10 off your registration to the general Catalyst Con. Okay, you have to be registered to Catalyst Con in order to attend my workshops. Well, I'm excited because the person I'm interviewing today is a repeat offender. And in fact, my very first interview with her on this show was live and in person and recorded at a Catalyst Con event. Let me, catch you up on what she's been up to. Tina Horn is a writer, teacher, and media maker. She produces and hosts the sexuality podcast, Why Are People Into That? Her first book, Love Not Given Lightly, is a collection of nonfiction stories about sex workers. She has also been published in Vice, Nerve, Girl Sex 101, and Best Sex Writing of 2015, which we just featured on the show. Her next book, A Guide to Sexting Etiquette, drops in 2016. Recently, she's been working as the creative director of 3L Media, developing books by Jiz Lee, Maxwell Lander, and Suzy Q. And she's the business development representative for Rentboy.com. Tina's workshops on dirty talk, sex worker self-care, and spanking have been featured on Good Vibrations, Kink.com, at Lesbian Sex Mafia, International Ms. Leather, The New School, and the Feminist Porn Conference. She is a Lambda Literary Fellow, the recipient of 2 Feminist Porn Awards, and she holds an MFA in Creative Nonfiction Writing from Sarah Lawrence. Born in Northern California, Tina's gone the other direction than the one that I'm going, and she now lives in Manhattan. Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, Tina Horn.
Hi, Tristan.
So today we're going to talk about your new book, your very first book, which is called Love Not Given Lightly. It actually has 2 subtitles, Profiles from the Edge of Sex, Porn Stars, Perverts, Femdoms, Rent Boys, and Other Professional Lovers.
That's right.
And I thought, what better way to introduce folks to the book than have you actually read the introduction?
All right, I'd be happy to.
Great.
Okay, here goes. Who the Hell is Tina Horn? By Tina Horn. I wrote the stories in Love Not Given Lightly to explain how and why I was transformed into Tina Horn. Or, I wrote these stories because Tina Horn transformed into me. Or maybe Tina Horn wrote these stories and you can send all complaints her way. Actually, I'm not convinced that Tina Horn exists. I'm not entirely convinced it's Tina Horn who's writing these words. Maybe it's actually me. But am I not Tina Horn? If not, then who the hell is she, and why is she always hogging the bathroom? Tina Horn was born in 2006, fully formed and perfectly legal, when, looking for a flexible gig to support my rock and roll lifestyle, I typed the word dominatrix into the adult gigs section of San Francisco Craigslist. Or was she in me archetypically all along? Is Tina Horn the real me, an amplification of my id, a creature of camp and confidence and creative impulses who animates my body? Did I have to become a sex worker in order to unleash her? Robert Zimmerman once told Rolling Stone, "I didn't create Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan has always been here." Obviously, I am Tina Horn, and I know what it's like to do or perform Tina Horn. She looks like me, she sounds like me, she finds the same things erotic. She puts more effort into her appearance than I do, she's more agreeable, less cerebral. But am I only Tina Horn when you're paying for my time? Am I Tina Horn when I sleep? When I die, will Tina Horn die too? Most importantly, wardrobe and attitude and ontological status aside, what is Tina Horn good for? Well, Tina Horn has made me some good money, for starters. Since 2006, I've worked as a professional BDSM switch, both in houses and as an independent, providing direct service fetish and fantasy exploration to clients who paid me an hourly rate. In 2009, I started to perform in independent, queer, and kinky hardcore videos in the Bay Area. In 2010, I began directing my own pornography and co-founded Queer Porn TV, a membership site that won 2 Feminist Porn Awards, a Cinekink Award, and an AVN nomination during the time I was a producer there. Throughout this era, I created and distributed zines about sex work, later publishing essays online and in magazines. I taught workshops on spanking and dirty talk and spoke on college panels. After moving to New York City, I worked in advocacy for people in the sex trades, especially with the Persist Health Project. Here's an excerpt from one of those zines, circa 2008. Marxist critic Walter Benjamin used prostitutes as examples of dialectical images where the commodity and seller are the same and reveal the systems of representation that produce them. He was onto something, but somehow I doubt Benjamin ever strapped on 6-inch stilettos and hogtied men for money, although, of course, we can never be sure. I can't remember exactly what I thought was going to happen when I created Tina Horn, but I know I got what I came for. Sex work is glamour and danger and boredom and drama and shock. Sex work is adrenaline highs and clandestine secrets and surprise orgasms. Sex work is a blue velvet crown royal bag stuffed full of lacy thongs. Bitches brew on an iPod shuffle, suggesting the girl you have a crush on for a double. It's also the stench of shit and maticide, the misery of a zeroing shift when you need to make rent, the insidious non-consent that hits you when your guard is down, the casual judgment from a friend at a party. For me, it was usually dangerous fun, occasionally violent, and always interesting. Sex work defined my 20s and continues to define my career, even though I have slowly been retiring since 2013. As I did less and less sex work, I had to ask, where was Tina Horn going? Well, I animated Tina Horn, and my clients enabled her to thrive. Yet it was my fellow sex workers that made her possible. That's why I wanted to write about them. They made the job emotionally sustainable, significantly safer from harm. These are the stories of people who have learned how to tell you the stories you want to hear, especially the ones that hurt. The title Love Not Given Lightly comes from a song by my favorite musician, Lou Reed, who died not long after I finished the first draft of this book. The song is Venus in Furs, named for the Leopold von Sacher Masoch. I could be butchering that title, but author name. But anyway, novel, the same name, both of which are notorious odes to the erotics of domination and submission. I used to play this song in sessions, slithering around to the pace of the tambourine, reveling in how weird it was and how much it made my clients squirm. Maybe Lou Reed was a sadomasochist, or maybe he just enjoyed scandalizing people. Either way, Lou totally got it. He got the literary value, he got the irony, and he wrote a line that has always encapsulated both BDSM and sex work to me. Taste the whip in love not given lightly. Taste the whip, now bleed for me. I met the subjects of this book because we were all different kinds of professional lovers. For our clients, we provided intimacy, satisfaction, entertainment, adventure, and therapy. That kind of love. I learned early on that the best way to give what I gave at work without draining myself was to find love with my coworkers. We gave each other lust, camaraderie, support, humor, and care. That kind of love. Being Tina Horn introduced me to myself. Being Tina Horn introduced me to many of the people who have shaped my life so far. These are love stories, not the love of default programming or heteronormativity. They're stories of the way love transforms us. A trans man learns to love his body. A fetishist learns to love his own cravings. A queer woman and queer man find platonic friendship as they are renting out their intimacy by the hour. An ordinary house becomes the threshold to a world of fantasy. Being Tina Horn taught me how to love by teaching me the value of my body and my talents. It took years of actual labor for me to realize what she was trying to tell me. You gotta labor for love. You gotta work hard to understand how love can pass through a whip and how pain can be transcendent. When you know your way around the economy of love, you know that you have to earn it.
Wow. There we go. Okay, so we got to take a break, but I think that'll give people a little something to chew on during commercials. And then when we come back, we're going to unpack this book and Tina Horn herself. So stay with us.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Inside Out is the voice of the inner revolution that is bringing positive change to our planet. Discover the amazing transformations already taking place from faraway lands to right here under our noses. Meet guests who are shaking things up for the better and gain insights and courage to help you become all that you can be. Co-hosted by Beth Green and James Maynard, Inside Out, The Inner Revolution airs live every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at PuckerUp.com. That's Tristan at PuckerUp.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking today with writer, teacher, and media maker, Tina Horn, the author of Love Not Given Lightly, Profiles from the Edge of Sex. There is a lot to talk about in that introduction, Tina. So before we get to some of the subjects of the book, I want to ask you a few questions, which is one of the things that I read in the promotional materials about this book is that you say instead of writing a sex worker memoir, you opted to tell the stories of the people you met along the way. Mm-hmm. So as a sex worker, is that, do you feel like that's what people wanted, your story?
Yeah. It also just felt like the most obvious route. And I also, in all of my years of talking about my work and writing about it and creating things about the sex work that I've done, sort of telling people the concrete details or the stories of what went on in session was never the thing that was the most interesting to me. The things that were much more interesting to me were things like, you know, Marxist analysis of labor and feminist analysis of my relationships with the, you know, people of different genders that I was working with, and the idea of community in sex work, and also everything that I was learning about BDSM and the psychology of BDSM. So I always kind of knew that I was never going to just tell like a, you know, a tell-all story. And I do think that a lot of those stories, whether it's the author's intention or the way that they get promoted, tend to fit into narratives that, first of all, were not true to my experience, and also I actually find like really problematic and sort of counterproductive for the sex worker rights movement and for feminism and a lot of other things that are very important to me. Specifically, that most sex worker memoirs get shoehorned into these redemption narratives, I'm like far from redeemed. and you know, the very idea that I would need to be redeemed somehow in order for my voice on all of these subjects of sex and sex work and BDSM and queerness, in order for that to be legitimate, that's just goes against everything that I believe in. So I wanted to sidestep that. And I just figured that the way to do that was to look around me instead of oversharing.
That's really funny, because I think that even though you don't overshare, as you say, you do kind of lay yourself bare in this introduction. The one thing that struck me in rereading it to prepare for the show was just how you jump to go and you kind of don't let up until you get to the end of this book.
Awesome.
No, it's really honest and it's gripping and it's complicated and it draws out various emotions. At least it did for me as a reader.
Awesome.
You don't, let's say this, you don't hold the reader's hand.
No.
And that was intentional?
Yeah, I mean, you know, so much of the book emerged from, I mean, this book, as much as its intention was to write a book about sex work, it was also for me to take on the biggest writing project that I had so far, and it did begin as my master's thesis, and I had a thesis advisor who handed me a book of New Yorker profiles and said, I think that you need to study this form in order to tell the stories that you want to tell, and that was really helpful. And so I was really, there are so many details in the book and so many things that are included in the book, from a word choice or a comma choice to the decision of like who to profile and what to say about them, that all emerged from these more like nonfiction writer or reporter anxieties than they even did about like ego anxieties. And so going back to what you were saying about laying myself bare, I mean, initially when I was working on the project, I was really trying to take myself out of it or recast myself as a reporter. And my early readers and my thesis advisor and editors, kept saying, well, we want to see more of you. We want to see more of you. And I kept saying, no, no, no. The whole point of this is to like leave myself out of it, because so many other people's stories and experiences were just more important to me. But then I realized that that even just politically that I needed to put myself out there, and also that I didn't, that it was important for me not to whitewash my story, and that sex workers shouldn't have to whitewash their stories or be happy hookers, as we say, in order to deserve human rights, in order to deserve our stories to be told. So there are definitely like some like darker or uncomfortable moments from my sex work career that I actually decided to include because I realized I was writing around them. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud that those ended up in the final version.
Well, and having read a bunch of sex worker memoirs myself, I was struck that was a very deliberate choice on your part. Because I have read the memoirs that kind of dance around that, and you don't. You go to these different places, like you say, of darkness, which more than anything aren't all that dark. I mean, yeah. I mean, as far as sex goes, gosh, we could go so much darker. Have you read
next time, Tristan?
Yeah, have you read Danny Wilde? Anyway, his book is very dark.
And so good.
But what I mean is that it more than anything, I think it brings to life this really complicated picture of sex work, which is what we need more of.
I guess like the truth of the matter is, and I know the stories that you're talking about from Danny Wilde's writing, and you know, the truth of the matter is that I had overall, by and large, an extremely positive experience of sex work, and I do continue to do sex work, but I have sort of been like slowly retiring for the past few years, or rather shifting my focus to sort of, I think, the same skills and the same themes, just in different mediums. But you know, my experience was so positive, and I'm so aware of how lucky I am that is true. And I guess I kind of wanted to pay homage to the factors that I felt contributed to what a positive experience that I had. And so, you know, that was the other sex workers who were supportive to me, the spaces that I was able to work in, the clients who were respectful, you know, and that's all in the book, but also the bad days at work, or the just the moments that were not as glamorous, also contributed to what a positive experience I had, because it was well rounded and real. And so I guess ultimately that's the story that I wanted to tell.
Well, and community is a theme that runs throughout this book. Not only your individual relationships with your subjects, with the folks who are profiled in the book, but also how you all kind of support each other and stick together in some ways. I think that there was a real sense of that after reading the book, that I'm glad everyone had each other.
Yeah.
Even, you know, for the good times and the bad.
Me too.
So one of the people you profile in the book is James Darling.
Oh, yes.
Who people may know as one of the most well-known F2M porn stars.
Definitely.
And he runs a site called F2Mfucker.com. One of the things I thought that you captured about James Darling that was so sweet is his shyness. And I think, you know, my experience with a ton of porn stars is that they are, in fact, kind of shy and awkward until you turn a camera on them.
So true.
And the situation becomes sexual, and then this fire is lit.
That's so true of James. Yeah. And I mean, as a writer, that's interesting to me. I guess now that I think about it, as a friend, that's interesting to me. I like people that contain multitudes. And I've shot James. I've directed some scenes of his, and that's very appealing to me. He like has this dichotomy of this like sort of sugar obsessed, like swishy little faggy boy, and then he just becomes this like sex machine when he takes his clothes off and you turn a camera on him. So he was so generous to share so much of his story. I mean, I think that his chapter in the book, the chapter about him, is the one where is the one that's most like classically a profile, because he is just willing to share so much about his childhood and his transition and his early days of sex work. And he was, we just had lunch the other day, and he was in town, and he was saying to me that it's so funny how it has become this like time capsule, because when I interviewed him and did all of the reporting for the piece, it was like 3 years ago, and now the book is out and it's sort of frozen in this time right before FTM Fucker was released, and so much has happened in his career and his transition and since then. So I don't know, in a way I would hope that writing about people can be a gift to them, like a portrait, like if you paint a portrait of someone for them. But then things do get a little ethically complicated with portraying people when part of what you're telling is the most secret parts of them.
Mm. Okay, good. Well, let's dig into that a little bit. But first, we've got to take another commercial break.
Cool.
I hope everyone, you're engaged in this. I really love this book. I recommend it to everyone. And we're gonna talk a little bit about ethics and about centering sex workers' lives and stories, which is something that Tina does quite well in this book. So stay with us. More about love not given lightly when we return.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
On the morning of August 5th, 1962, the world awoke to the shocking news that Marilyn Monroe, one of the biggest icons in Hollywood history, had been found dead. What really happened that night? Join Nina Bosky as she seeks to uncover both the life and tragic death of Marilyn Monroe, and what keeps her so popular over 50 years later. Good Night Marilyn Radio, live every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking today with Tina Horn about her book, Love Not Given Lightly, Profiles from the Edge of Sex, Porn Stars, Perverts, Femdoms, Rent Boys, and Other Professional Lovers. I like to say the whole title because I do feel like it explains what the book is about really well.
I know, it's like a Fiona Apple album title, right?
Yeah, and I don't even have to explain it. There's no tagline. There's no like one-liner. It's all in there.
And the book is actually quite short, so it's kind of like the title is like longer than the book.
So one of the things I found interesting is one of the people that you profile in it is Bianca Stone.
Yes.
Who at the time that you profile her was a kind of an up and coming or newish to the scene porn star, and one who marketed herself in very particular ways. So first, let's just give me some background on Bianca Stone.
Absolutely. So Bianca Stone, so I moved away from the Bay Area in 2011. I moved to New York, and around that time, Bianca Stone was definitely emerging on the queer, feminist, artsy, radical sex work scene in the Bay Area, which had been, you know, my world for a very long time. And I really admired her. I thought she was super sexy. Actually, I am realizing that I'm pretty sure that Bianca's pronouns are they, but I'm going to use she just to be consistent, because that's what I use in the book, because that was sort of the persona that Bianca was projecting. Anyway, we sort of became friends remotely. We met and collaborated at the Feminist Porn Conference and Catalyst Con, actually, and then through several, visits to each other's places of residence, sort of became friends, and she was so compelling to me. And because I didn't know her as well, I thought, as this project that eventually became Love Not Given Lightly was developing, I thought she would be a good person to profile. And she definitely was and is. She marketed herself as a hairy girl, and this is a very niche part of the porn industry that, you know, is generally characterized by sort of like hippie, free spirit girls who don't shave their armpits, don't shave their legs, and don't shave their pubic hair. And she just really seized on the opportunity to market herself both as an escort and a porn star as a hairy girl. And so around the time that I was publishing my thesis, she totally disappeared off the face of the earth and, disappeared off of social media, which is basically like dying, right? It's like,
in this day and age,
exactly,
yes.
Like, she might as well have gone to Mars. She's not on Twitter anymore. And she used to be very active on social media, and nobody really knew or would say where she had gone. Then there were rumors that she was in the woods practicing witchcraft, which frankly, if you know, like, this group of people is like really not that far-fetched. Actually, I was like, oh, okay, she's in the woods practicing witchcraft, totally. And but I couldn't get a hold of her, and I was faced with the ethical question of, because I don't have the opportunity to do with her what I did with James and Sage from the Gates and Nigel and Quinn Cassidy, who are the other people who are the subjects of the profiles in the rest of the book, and really all of the journalism and work that I do, each of them I gave the opportunity at several stages, the thesis, the publishing of the book, to read my drafts, correct any, to fact check for me, but also to veto subjects of privacy, which they, a liberty they all took advantage of to one degree or another, which made me feel like I was, doing my ethical due diligence as a nonfiction writer, as a reporter, and as a sex worker, and also as a friend, because I am friends with everybody in the book. And I didn't have the opportunity to do that with Bianca, and I wondered if I should scrap her chapter for that reason. And I ultimately decided that I really that her story was really fascinating, and I was hoped, you know, she had sat down with me to do these interviews, and I assumed that she would want her stories to be told. So I kind of tried to give a context for what had happened, what it might mean that she had disappeared, what the, you know, rumors about her might mean. And so that's how it does exist in the published book. And actually, the night of my book release party at the Center for Sex and Culture in San Francisco, Mickey Maud, who was reading, said, "Oh, you know, Bianca Stone just followed me on Twitter today." And of course, everybody in the room was like, "What? She's back?" And it was this very bizarre thing. And I wrote her and I said, "Hey, I don't know if you've heard about this book, you know, I'd love to send you a copy and I'd love to talk about it." And she was just like very upset with me, but she wouldn't tell me why. And so I haven't really had that much conversation with her about it. You know, this has really taught me a really big lesson where I really regret upsetting her. I really regret the idea that she might feel that I violated her trust in me. That's extremely important to me as a writer and as a sex worker who uses my art as advocacy. You know, I think that the lesson that I've really learned is that I feel like maybe I need to have people sign releases like a 2257 for when you're, I just kept imagining being a pornographer where it's like, you always get the paperwork because you can't track people down. You know this, Tristan, like you can't track a porn star down to like get them to sign their 2257, you know? So, you know, I feel like I might need to do that, as clinical as it sounds, like a prenup, in the future, because, I hope not to have an experience like this again, although, you know, you read David Sedaris stories and, you know, David Foster Wallace stories, et cetera, about, you know, people that they've pissed off by talking about them. So I guess maybe it's inevitable, but I'm glad that you asked about it, because I really just want to be transparent about that, and I don't want to, like, sweep it under the rug, and I want to, like, accept accountability for, you know, not being as trustworthy as I would want to be to a fellow sex worker.
Well, let me just say for listeners that 2257 is a kind of shorthand for the paperwork that all pornographers have to get and keep and maintain records of in order to prove that their performers not only consented to the performance, but are legally 18 or older. So let me just, because 2257. That's
sorry,
fine.
I'm talking shop with you.
No, you're talking shop. But what I think is interesting is that, you know, you address a little bit of Bianca quite disappearing in the book. And although it's a dramatic moment within the book and the world of the book, it is not a dramatic moment in sex work nor in porn to have someone disappear. So anyone who's worked in porn for any length of time will know that it actually can be quite transient, and people can come in and kind of blow up and be really big and then disappear, and you literally don't know how to reach them 6 months after you've shot them for a movie or you sat on their living room couch. Like, you literally don't know where they went. And that's kind of one exit strategy as well for sex work. I think that's an interesting thing represented in your book, is people have all sorts of ways that they then transition into lives other than sex work. And those are personal and professional. And one of those strategies is to kind of disappear for a while and then reemerge, sometimes making a comeback, other times reemerging in a totally straight life with another name, you know, in order to escape some of that stigma.
Yeah, I'm so glad you used the word stigma, because I do not know if this is true for Bianca, but I do know that in general with this phenomenon that you're describing, I think that people might misinterpret it as people feeling ashamed of what they've done, when in fact, I think the much stronger force is fear of stigma, because sex worker stigma, even for legal sex work, such as porn performance, is so strong. And that's so much of my advocacy in the nonfiction writing and reporting that I do is about that. I think it's one of the strongest things that that affects sex workers, especially as they're trying to decide how to transition into a different phase of their lives, as we often do.
But are you saying that in the end, if you had to do it all over again, would you not have included her story without being able to reach her before the book was published?
I asked myself this question, and I wish I could say that it was an easy answer, that I wouldn't. But I'm proud of the story, and I know why I made the decision that I did. And it's not like I interviewed her. It's not like I secretly recorded a conversation. She knew that she was consenting to being involved in a project. She just I wasn't able to contact her at every stage of where the project went. So, I don't know if I would do it differently, because I think that this particular story of what people do when they've sort of, flared up in the industry and then need to get out of it maybe by disappearing into the woods is an interesting story, and it's really consistent with the project and the themes of the book, and that people might relate, and it might it might teach them something. So I don't think that I would do it differently, but I do regret making her upset, and I would welcome the opportunity to reconcile with her and to apologize.
Okay, well, it's complicated, just like life. So so good. Let's take another break. And when we come back, I want to talk more about the book and also about your podcast, because listeners of this radio show will definitely love your podcast. So let's take a break. And when we come back, more with Tina Horn.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Tune in each week for Monica Phillips and Powerful Conversations. This is a thought-provoking show for business people, leaders, and entrepreneurs. We'll feature today's thought leaders and industry trendsetters from across several locations and industries. Give yourself permission to be inspired and live a fulfilling life. Be sure to listen to Powerful Conversations live every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, 12 noon Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I've been talking with Tina Horn, and we've been digging into her new book, Love Not Given Lightly. So, Tina, You profile a bunch of sex workers who are doing different kinds of sex work. That's and you right. also profile a client.
Yes.
A sex work consumer.
Uh-huh.
And this one is quite a character. He's British. He's distinguished. He's an older gentleman. He's really into giving spankings. Now, was this kind of a deliberate move on your part because it seems to me it kind of rounds out all the stories to hear that voice that we so rarely hear from, the voice of the client.
Yeah, I mean, I always knew that Nigel is his name. I always knew that Nigel was going to be a part of this project. He has a very interesting story that definitely has a lot of themes in it that were the themes that I wanted to convey with the project. But he also, I mean, part of the reason, so he was my client for a long time, and we became, we had a really unique relationship. I was much closer and with him than most of my clients, and would definitely consider him a friend. He continues to be a friend. And part of the reason that we got along is that we're both storytellers. I mean, from our first session, I mean, I also, he loves spanking and he's very good at it. And I love to be spanked personally and professionally, especially by people who are good at it, especially when I'm getting paid. So it was a match made in pervert heaven for sure. But also, you know, we did a lot of role plays. There's a role play scene that I write about in the book. That's probably the most like erotic part of the book. So, you know, it's, there's steamy stuff in this book for sure. And part of the reason that we got along is that we're, you know, both such voracious storytellers. And so I loved the way that he told his story of becoming a sex worker client and all the ways that that helped him to transform and become a better lover and a better man, and to find more happiness and satisfaction than he had ever had before in his life. And I feel like it's such an amazing story of what can happen when you have repressed your desire your whole life. And then, you know, in Nigel's case, he turned 40 and he was like, I have to stop repressing my desire. The shame is killing me. And he found, he through sex, through hiring sex workers, he found this very civil, structured way to explore that that really worked for him, and I think could really work for other people. So in a way, I wanted to put his story out there because not all clients are like Nigel. Not all clients have the experience that Nigel did. But I think as a an example of the possibilities of BDSM and sex work and just being honest with yourself about who you are erotically and what your identity is, it can be so liberating. And he is also just very charming to interview. He's like a reporter's dream because he's got it all laid out and he's got a nice British accent, and you know, so it was almost like the rest of the book was written around that chapter, actually, and all of its themes.
You also profile a place where you worked for quite some time, a place called The Gates, mm-hmm. which is a house where professional dominants and submissives work.
Yeah.
And it sounds a lot like, from an outsider's perspective, a lot like The Lusty Lady.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You weren't unionized,
no.
But other than that, there was a sense of real self-awareness about the
yes.
work that you were doing,
yes.
and it was politicized, and people were very supportive of one another, and it was sex positive, and it wasn't
women,
body shaming.
Always, it was... The Gates was started and has always and continues to be run 20 years later by the same woman. So that makes it very unique and extraordinary.
Yeah, and it sounded, quite frankly, like a better place to work than several places I've worked.
Yes. Yes, it really was. It was a dream, and it was the perfect time in my life to work there.
Well, that story is in the book, and as well as the last chapter, which I've got to say is my favorite, but we are out of time.
No! People just have to pick up the book.
We're completely out of time, so I don't want to overlook that another one of the subjects in this book that we didn't get to is Quinn Cassidy.
Yes.
another fascinating person within this world. And that particular chapter, I think, contains some of the best writing.
Thank you.
And also has some of the most intense, I think, intense things are going on in that chapter. So I feel like I'm teasing people, but let me say that, like, the payoff of this last chapter is pretty fucking big in my eyes.
They love to be teased, Tristan, I'm sure.
And thank you, Tina Horn, for being on my show again.
Oh my God, it is a pleasure. Thanks for being on. You were just on my show. We talked about butt plugs.
I know. So let me tell people about that. Tina is the host of a show called Why Are People Into That? And she interviewed me recently about butt plugs. And, you know, people got online on my social media and said, like, oh, hey, I really enjoyed your thing with Tina, or I just listened to it. I found it so fun. And truthfully, you know, I've been talking about anal sex, anal pleasure, and butt plugs for 15 years, but we got into it in a way that was different. Yeah. I actually had more to say, and I went a little deeper. You went a little deeper. We both went a little deeper. It was also late at night, and we happened to be friends. And so I really love the way that episode turned out.
Well, and I'm so happy to hear that.
I hope people will check it out. You can subscribe to that podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. You can go to whyarepeopleintothat.com, also on Twitter @intothat. Podcast. And of course, everyone, I want to remind you, the name of the book is Love Not Given Lightly, Profiles from the Edge of Sex, Porn Stars, Perverts, Femdoms, Rent Boys, and Other Professional Lovers. You can get it wherever books are sold. You can find out more about Tina at tinahorn.net. Please follow her on Twitter @TinaHornsAss. No punctuation, all one word, Tina Horn's ass. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, segment producer and editor Colton, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my engineer, Michael on the board today, everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, when my guest will be Professor Jane Ward, talking about her compelling new book, Not Gay, Sex Between Straight White Men. Oh, you do not want to miss that one, people. Until then, hit me up on social media and take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.